It's about 12, 13 seconds after the hour. Today is Tuesday, the 19th of July. I'm Ben Brown. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. And this afternoon, we have several interesting guests. Jill Weitz will be here to highlight Saturday's Southeast Feast. We'll meet Dr. Nicholas Newbery, a new obstetrician-gynecologist here in town. We'll have a preview of A Night of Shakespeare, which is a fundraiser for victims of the shooting in Orlando. And M.K. McNaughton, Mark Graham, and Megan Garrison are here to show off a tote bag. Of course, in addition to Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, everything else here on a Juno Afternoon. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back after National Native News.
For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons in for Antonia Gonzalez. Donald Trump's newly appointed director of coalitions maintains the campaign is doing as well or better with minority groups as previous Republican presidential candidates. During an interview at the Republican National Convention, Alan Cobb says there are plans to develop better ways to communicate with individual groups.
Our plan, we're in process. We definitely will have a Native American and Islander outreach and a lot of other ethnic groups. Maybe we want to be concerned. We don't want to play identity politics the way the Democrats do, but yet we want to make sure we're talking to the folks in the ways that they like to be communicated with.
Cobb says the main effort will focus on universal themes such as the economy, jobs, and a stronger America. Cobb joined the campaign this month to manage several coalitions to get behind Trump. Polls indicate Trump is less popular with women, Latinos, and most other ethnic groups. Previous campaigns have turned to several people from within each group to serve as liaisons. Cobb previously worked as a campaign advisor for Senator Mike Pompeo and Representative Pat Roberts. He also founded the Kansas chapter of Americans for Prosperity. A proposal aims to put the Navajo Nation governing structure up for a vote in November. The Farmington Daily Times reports a bill presented on the Navajo Nation Council's website asks for a referendum to consolidate the nation's 110 chapters. The referendum instead proposes 24 regional governments. The new structure would eliminate each chapter's top officer and replace them with an elected commissioner. One delegate tells the paper the referendum is based on recommendations from a task force formed last year. Officials with the South Dakota School District will keep its Warriors nickname, but has decided to change the school's logo to eliminate Native American references. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
The Castlewood Warriors used various Indian symbols throughout most of their history, but began phasing out those references when threatened with a lawsuit. Activist Betty Ann Gross demanded the changes 15 years ago. Now, after more than a decade without an identifying mark, the Castlewood School Board has adopted a new logo after about 4 months of discussion with district residents. The school will keep its Warriors nickname and royal blue and gold team colors, but the district will adopt a Spartan head as the school's insignia. Castlewood Superintendent Keith Fodness says the district has not had Native American symbols on any uniforms since the earlier discussions with Gross. Fodness says he expects the new Spartan head logo around district buildings and on uniforms in the near future. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellen Bold.
Members of the Fort Peck Tribal Council rejected a proposal to stiffen penalties for methamphetamine possession. The Billings Montana Gazette reports the vote comes as the tribe struggles with increasing meth use problems. Tribal Council Vice Chairman Charles Hedris says the problem is too few police officers, not lax penalties for offenders. A delegation of tribal leaders is in Cuba this week. Officials representing at least four tribes and nations are in Havana to meet with Cuban government representatives, including the ministers of finance, tourism, fisheries, and agriculture. The delegation is traveling with the National Congress of American Indians and the Native American Finance Officers Association. The tour will include the Cuban Center for Biotechnology and Genetic Engineering and the Latin American School of Medicine. Members of the Nisqually Tribal Council are joining Interior Secretary Sally Jewell and other officials at an event to name the Nisqually Wildlife Refuge after the late civil rights leader Billy Frank Jr. The refuge encompasses the Nisqually River estuary near Olympia, Washington, set aside in 1974 to provide habitat for birds and wildlife. Frank, a Nisqually tribal member, is a noted activist who stood up for Native American fishing rights and environmental stewardship. His first of many arrests for what officials deemed illegal fishing was along the Nisqually River. He was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom, among many other honors. Frank died in 2014. For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Since 1970, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues like treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And it's about 6 minutes after the hour. Today's Tuesday, the 19th of July. I'm Ben Brown. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. Our first guests today are Bo Schooler, Liz Purdy, and Jill Weitz, here to talk about this Saturday's Southeast Feast. So welcome to all of you to A Juno Afternoon.
Thank you, Ben.
And this event is not only a culinary delight, but it's a fundraiser for a very worthy cause, which is Salmon Beyond Borders. So does one of you want to perhaps tell us a little bit about the organization before we get into the menu and the really tasty parts of our conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. Salmon Beyond Borders is a campaign that kind of formalized a little bit more than 2 years ago with different interest groups in Juneau. At this point, we work alongside with commercial and sport fishing groups, conservation organizations, municipal leaders, individuals. We work closely with tribal entities throughout Southeast, namely the United Tribal Transboundary Mining Work Group, which is a tribal organization that represents 14 of the 19 federally recognized tribes in Southeast that are all working to defend the transboundary rivers, namely the Taku, Stikine, and Yunik that straddle the Southeast Alaska border with British Columbia, that are all under threat from different large-scale mines in different stages of development throughout those watersheds. So this issue has brought together these collective voices, and we've been working really hard the last 2 years to raise awareness to this issue, engage our both local, state, and federal governments to support our efforts to raise awareness and demand enforceable protections for our fisheries and water quality. And one of the ways in which we've been working to raise awareness to this issue is partnering with folks like Chef Bo Schooler and other chefs throughout the country to elevate this issue and connect with people around salmon.
Because obviously if it ends up on your plate, it was once in a river, and that river could or could not be in better shape depending on what's happening at a mine upriver from the river.
Yep.
Well, I know Lieutenant Governor Malott has taken a really strong personal interest in this since he got elected. And I know a lot of elected leaders around Southeast have been really concerned because the Pellisquit Chief actually has been closed and then they want to reopen it, but there's already been a release of toxic water from the closed operation in the past, right?
Absolutely, yeah. That mine was abandoned in 1957 and since then has been leaching acid mine drainage into the Pellisquit Chief River.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, obviously it's a very important issue, and things are regulated a little differently in Canada. There's a lot of power at the provincial level there, unlike in the United States where we have a federal agency, the EPA, that would have a lot more say over how things are done or not done.
Right.
And so that's one source of concern. Okay, so that's kind of the background, that there are some mines on the other side of the border that we need to keep our eye on, and that requires resources, and the Southeast Feast is one way to generate those. So let's talk a little bit about that. It's coming up this Saturday.
Right. It's going to be at the Jack from noon to 4. And it's, tickets are on sale through the Jack online, and then it's $40, and it gets you, how'd it get you?
Well, if it gets you in the door at the Jack,
yeah.
That's a start.
So we have 10 different booths, so there's 7 chefs coming up, and then the guys down at the Taqueria are doing a booth, and the guys at the Rookery, and then we're doing one through Panhandle and Lupo.
Okay.
Well.
Okay. And Lupo is in Boca de Lupo, in the Mouth of the Wolf, which is the new restaurant, relatively new restaurant, in the Silver Bow Inn, old location there.
Yeah.
And but that's going to be separate and distinct from the Rookery. So delectable things from each of these fine restaurants in Juneau.
Yeah.
And it's just a tasting menu. You kind of go from station to station and just figure out what you like the most.
Yeah, it's a little bite from each person.
Tell them about the passport.
Well, when you enter, you'll be given a passport to travel around Southeast Alaska, and that is going to give you the opportunity to stop by each of the 10 stations that will be at the Jack. All of the visiting chefs will have a station, and so we have chefs coming in from Houston, New Orleans, Toronto, San Francisco, Napa Valley. So we really do have an incredible collection of folks, and these are literally dishes that you just simply will not find any other time in Juneau, and that are really the first time they've ever going to be under one roof, and we have the opportunity to have that here. So it's a pretty exciting opportunity. Just has never happened before.
And it sounds, if you listed all those outside places of origin, there are going to be more non-Alaskan chefs than Alaskan chefs, if I did the math correctly there.
That is correct, yeah.
Wow. Well, and Bo, how does that make you feel?
Well, that's kind of the point. If you did an event and it was just a bunch of Alaska chefs, and then just kind of the news would stay in Alaska. But if you get outside chefs to come up, then it kind of gets the attention of media like it did last year.
Brilliant.
They're going to bring more attention to what Salmon Beyond Borders is doing.
Excellent. And they will go back to the places they came from and talk about how beautiful it is here and how great and fresh the ingredients are, and people are going to want to come here. It'll be a virtuous cycle.
Yeah, definitely.
All
yeah,
right.
It was Bo's idea last year to invite, he had three chefs up last summer to do a smaller scale sustainable seafood dinner, which turned out to be a great success. And the media was syndicated all the way to Miami and San Francisco. And so the success of that event really got him going and wanting to make this a bigger deal and yeah, get as many people on board as possible.
So 1 to 4 at the Jack. Tickets are available online.
Noon to 4.
Excuse me, noon to 4. Sorry, I just cut an hour off of your event. My apologies. Let's expand that back. Noon to 4. So it's a midday event, and the Vendini site through the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council sell tickets to all sorts of things. If people want to learn more about Salmon Without Borders, Beyond Borders, and familiarize themselves with the cause, is there a website there?
There is. It's salmonbeyondborders.org. And if you would like to get to the ticket link, you can also go through salmonbeyondborders.org to get your ticket for Southeast Feast.
Excellent. Now, the funds that are raised at this event, I don't know how large an organization Salmon Beyond Borders is, but I assume they'll be used to defray the cost of getting the word out about the need to protect these transboundary waterways?
Absolutely.
That is correct. There's always more work to do, of course. It takes a fair bit to get seven chefs from around North America to Juneau, and we've had an incredible community and local outpouring of support with our sponsors, so we want to give a huge thank you to them. Alaskan Brewing will have a beer garden at the event.
I was going to ask about that.
And we've had a fantastic amount of seafood donated from Alaska Glacier Seafoods, Taku Smokeries, Taku River Reds, Sitka Salmon Shares, and so those are all Southeast-based seafood processors who are putting up the product of this like unparalleled seafood that will be made with these unique dishes. So we want to give a huge thanks to them and also the variety that will be there. We've got, of course, salmon, coho, sockeye, king, halibut, crab, rockfish,
scallops.
So it's really going to be...
Sablefish? Any sablefish?
We do have some black cod,
right.
True cod as well. So it's going to be a feast in flavor, I think in the fullest sense.
And Annie B is going to be spinning tunes.
So there's music, there's a beer garden, there's just a ridiculously delicious array of foods. It seems like an unmissable event for anyone who's not physically going to be unable to be there this Saturday.
We certainly think so.
All right, so it's the Saturday Southeast Feast, and how many years has this been going on?
This is the first ever.
Oh, this is the first Southeast Feast, so yet one more reason to go. Be there for the inaugural event, support a worthy cause, taste some delicious food. One more question I do have, though, are the outside chefs going to be allowed to cook with Alaskan ingredients, or do they have to bring their own?
Yeah, no, some of them are using forage stuff. So we have some kelp that just got brought in. We're getting some berries, so we're going to be working with local products as much as possible.
And they're already here. The outside chefs are in town or kind of getting
here
soon?
No, they get in tomorrow.
Okay. But they'll have a couple of days to work and practice their
Terrorize
craft.
The town, yeah.
And they're going to be here again with you on Thursday.
All right. Well, I'm not hosting on Thursday
Jeff.
Afternoon. I imagine that will be Lori. But I don't know. There will be someone here on this side of the table. If not, they'll just turn the mics on and talk amongst themselves.
Yeah, good luck. They're rowdy.
Yeah, and we usually tend to frown on leaving. I mean, I can't even imagine why they let me in here. But, I mean, an unintended studio. Stranger things have happened here in public radio in Alaska's capital city. Well, so Bo, Liz, and Jill, anything else you want to share with our listeners about the upcoming Southeast Feast, the first annual event for Salmon Beyond Borders?
We look forward to seeing you there. There will be over 300 folks, and we hope you're one of them.
Very good. And so that's one more important point. If you were to wait too late, there's a chance it might sell out.
That's correct.
And, boy, you would just be miserable standing there smelling those delicious aromas wafting out of the Jack and being denied admission. So if you're interested, you want to go online and get your tickets now, go to salmonbeyondborders.org, learn more about the organization. And I want to thank Bo Schooler, Liz Purdy, and Jill Weitz for being here this Juneau afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You and our homies gone together like
like savory sweet and ice and snow. You make summertime last until December. Walking down roads we fade with paper. Like trickling rain, the bells they ring. Under umbrellas I just can't remember. But where's the saying? Where's my mind? Where's my mind? My mind is woo because of you. And there's nothing I can do that will turn my mind away from you. Oh. If ever there was a sun that shined on me, if ever there was a dream come true, if ever the truth existed, it was you. Made my mind woo. With the crazy kind of clarity. When my mind is on you, now I see through. My mind is woo. Semi-sane insanity. When my mind is on you. And if this makes no sense to you at all, take a chance with me, trying to stumble. Ballpoint world. Let's get back to the cradle where we all started. There's boys and girls, find a mind. Where's my mind? Where's my mind? Where's my mind? My mind is woo. And it's true. It's that crazy kind of clarity.
It's about 18 minutes past the hour. That was a track from Martin Sexton. He'll be playing at this year's Southeast Alaska State Fair up in Haines in a few weeks. Our next guest on a Juneau afternoon is Dr. Nicholas Newbery, and he is a new obstetrician and gynecologist here in town. So welcome to Juneau, and welcome to a Juneau afternoon.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for having me on the show.
And before we went on the air, I was, you know, making sure that you were here of your own volition, that you didn't lose a bet or were otherwise, you know, conscripted to come to Juneau. But you have reasons for being here.
Yeah. You know what? I first came to Juneau when I was 18 years old, working at a fishing lodge on Shelter Island. And I worked my way through college up here running a charter fishing boat for several years. I met my wife. She actually ended up being my deckhand one summer on a fishing boat. And it's been our dream to come back ever since we left. So here we are 12 years later, and we're super excited to be back.
And this iteration of your time in Juneau, though, is pretty fresh. You've only been back for about a week.
Yep. This is our seventh day in town, and it hasn't rained since we've been here.
Well, I'm sure that can be taken care of. I'm sure there's someone listening who will fix that problem for us in life. I'm actually, and you know, yesterday was the hottest 18th of July since, I don't know, 53 years ago or something, it said in the newspaper this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still pinching myself. I don't feel like I'm in Juneau.
It's pretty nice. So That's good to know that you had some roots that brought you back up here, but you must have obviously not made this decision on a whim. It's a big thing to move to a place and open a medical practice. So talk a little bit about your decision about how you decided this would be a good place. I mean, there's probably a real need for an obstetrician and gynecologist here in town.
Yeah, you know, there is a need. It's, you know, multifold of what brings me here. You know, part of it is, you know, my faith has led me here. I feel called to this community. There's the need to serve this community professionally, and I think it's a great place to raise a family, in my opinion. I like the pace of life here. I love the outdoors. My wife and I hold Juno. There's a tender spot in our hearts for Juno, and it's multifactorial for our family, for my career. It's just going to be really fulfilling, I strongly believe.
Excellent. So where specifically, professionally, are you going to be setting up your medical offices?
So I'm joining the practice of Dr. Nell Wagner and Dina Darnell. We're renaming the practice to Juno Obstetrics and Gynecology since we're going to be offering obstetric services now. And we're in the Juno Medical Center, which is just adjacent to Bartlett Hospital.
Okay, so a very convenient location, which is always wise because you want to be close to the hospital if you need to send somebody up there. And Dina and Nell, certainly known medical providers here in the community, so that should really help you get off and running. Have you already started seeing patients?
You know, we decided to give myself a couple weeks to unpack, and I'm going to start seeing patients August 1st.
All right, well, that's not that much of a vacation, obviously.
No, it's not.
But if the weather's like this, she'll be glad that you took a little time off to enjoy it before you're in the office every day.
Absolutely. I still have a lot of unpacking to do. I'm still digging through my suitcase to find my clothes, so we're gonna have to get some rain so I can actually force myself to stay inside long enough to unpack something.
Okay, again, you know who you are who's listening about the rain. You've been tasked to help Dr. Newbery make sure he has adequate time to get ready to see patients. So if people are interested, when will the newly renamed practice of? I mean, I guess people could call the existing number right now.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a transition. We haven't fully renamed it yet. We've built a website, so you can actually go visit the website and get more information about the practice, hours, services that we're going to offer. The website's junoobgyn.com. You can call the office at any time. The number is 586-1717 as well.
And, well, this is very exciting. As we were discussing before we went on the air, both my parents are physicians, and it's a small but tight-knit community of medical providers here in town, and often when someone retires, that person's replacement, if there is one, doesn't come along for a long time, and that can lead to people kind of going elsewhere for their medical care. So to know that there's a new, young, committed to being in Juno OBGYN will probably be of great interest to many people, certainly those who are about to have babies or thinking of having a family or enlarging their families in the future. What else are you particularly excited about being in Juno? Some of the outside activities you mentioned.
You know, the main thing is I love the mountains and the ocean, and Juno offers both of those. So I'm very excited to get to live amongst both things. My training has taken me away from the West Coast and put me in the Midwest, and so it's really allowed me to solidify my appreciation for the mountains and the ocean. And it's funny, my friends all thought I was sick because we'd have a overcast, rainy, gray day, and those were the days I was happy. I just felt nostalgic and giddy with excitement. It just felt like home to me. So,
where in the Midwest were you?
In Iowa for 4 years, and then in Michigan for 4 years as well, where I did my specialty training at Michigan State University.
All right. So, yeah, very, very different physically and kind of culturally and socially, I think, from Southeast Alaska. Obviously.
Absolutely.
Well, that's very exciting. So there is a new website. If you want to say that name again, listeners might make a note of it, and they can go learn more about the practice that you're moving into.
Yeah, the website's junoobgyn.com.
Excellent. And your wife, is she also in the medical profession?
You know, she's a dental hygienist, and she stopped working after we had our second child when I was in residency. So, and we've added a third child since then as well. So she is busy currently staying at home with the kids. We've got one that's going to be going off to school this year, so we don't know what she's going to do. She's pretty happy where she's at. Whether or not she'll go back to work, I'm not sure.
All right. Well, we obviously have very good dentists and dental hygienists in this town, too, but everyone needs clean teeth, so there will be opportunities at some point should she decide she wants to reenter, I'm sure. Well, anything else you'd like to share this seventh day in town with our listeners here on a Juneau afternoon?
No, I just want to say it's I've received such a warm welcome, and I'd like to thank everybody who's extended that welcome. And I'm excited to become a part of the community and see what I can and offer and hopefully improve the quality of life here with some extent.
Well, I am confident that you will do so. You seem to have a very committed attitude about it. And so with that, welcome to Juneau, Nicholas Newberry, a new obstetrician gynecologist here in town. And thanks so much for being our guest on a Juneau afternoon today.
Thank you, Ben.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 19th of July, 2016. It was on this day, 1954, J.R.R. Tolkien published The Lord of the Rings, Part One, The Fellowship of the Ring, a sequel to The Hobbit, which was published 17 years before, the story of Bilbo Baggins, who goes through Middle-earth, comes back with a magical ring. It took Tolkien 17 years because he was a professor at Oxford. He had to write in his spare time, usually at night. He wasn't sure what the story should be, and then World War II broke out, and he started to see the book as an allegory, but still he wanted to get the details right, the geography, the language, the mythology of Middle Earth. He typed the final copy himself, sitting on a bed in his attic, typewriter on his lap, tapping it out, two-fingered, a half million words long. First edition, 3,500 copies. Today, more than 150 million copies have been sold. It's one of the best-selling books of all time. It's the birthday of Edgar Degas, 1834, Paris, known for his paintings of female dancers. He dropped out of law school to study at the École des Beaux-Arts, painted ballet dancers because it earned him the most money. He had friends, painters, Manet, Monet, Renoir, but they left him one by one, unable to bear his anti-Semitism. Renoir said, "What a creature he was, that Degas. All his friends had to leave him. I was one of the last to go, but even I couldn't stay until the end." In his last years, nearly blind, Degas wandered the streets of Paris. After his death, they found more than 150 wax sculptures in his studio, including a famous one, The Little 14-Year-Old Dancer, it's called, which has since been cast in bronze. Edgar Degas, who said if painting weren't so difficult, it wouldn't be so much fun. And it's the birthday of George McGovern, Avon, South Dakota, 1922, son of a Methodist minister who became a fighter pilot, World War II, flew 29 combat missions before his plane was shot down over the Adriatic. His parents were Republicans. He was elected to Congress as a Democrat, then to the Senate, reelected in 68, emerged as a leading opponent to the war in Vietnam, George McGovern, who said, "I'm fed up with old men dreaming up wars for young men to die in." Here's a poem for today by Ron Kirchhey entitled Cinderella's Diary. I miss my stepmother. What a thing to say, but it's true. The prince is so boring, 4 hours to dress, and then the cheering throngs again. The page who holds the door is cute enough to eat. Where is he? Once Mr. Charming kisses my forehead goodnight. Every morning I gaze out a casement window at the hunters, dark men with blood on their boots, who joke and mount, their black trousers straining, rough beards, calloused hands, selfish, abrupt. Oh, dear diary, I am lost in ever after. Those insufferable birds, someone in every room with a lute, the queen calling me to look at another painting of her son, this time holding the transparent slipper I wish I'd never seen. Cinderella's Diary, poem by Ron Kirchee from Vampire Planet, new and selected poems, published by Red Hen Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by LegalZoom, resources to help protect intellectual property, including trademark, copyrights, patents, and independent attorney consultations. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 30 minutes, almost 31 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is the 19th of July, Tuesday. This is a Juno afternoon, and I have three people here from Juno Douglas Little Theater, Stacy, Heather, and Frank, and they're going to share some information about JDLT generally and specifically about a Shakespeare celebration for a good cause. So welcome to a Juno afternoon.
Thank you.
And, thanks for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Absolutely. And now, if this were yesterday afternoon, I would be lying if I'd said that. If I were inside at this point 24 hours, I would be miserable because it was record-breakingly hot outside. Yeah. We don't have to contend with that today, but we can thank the weather gods. Something Shakespearean about that, because we're in the right place at the right time. So tell us about this celebration. It's going to be on the 22nd of July at 6 p.m., but I don't know a whole lot more about it than that.
Well, Juno Douglas Little Theater has actually put on two Shakespeare monologue competitions the last 2 years. This was going to be our third year doing it, but we decided to do a fundraiser instead and do a Shakespeare celebration, not so much focus on the competition side of things, and just have people come read. And all the proceeds are going to go to the Orlando shooting victims and their families. And we just really wanted to raise money for people who have been struggling. And we thought the best way to do that is to showcase love and that love wins.
Excellent. And so it's not a really highly structured event, but you do have people who are doing some of the reading.
Yes, we have people who have signed up, and then you can also sign up when you come. If you feel that you want to get up and read a scene with your friend or read a sonnet that you love, it's very relaxed, but it's open to anyone.
And we're going to have, to play into the donations, you can vote for your favorite performer of the night with money, and all of that money, all of the proceeds are going towards the donations. JDLT isn't keeping any of the proceeds from this. So you can vote with money for your favorite performer. We do have prizes. A lot of local businesses have shown their support, and we'll get into thanking them later, but we have lots of prizes to give out, and we're going to have a silent auction too from some of these items that have been donated to us.
So it really is a fundraiser, a fundraising opportunity, and it's a $15 suggested donation, and that's going to be this Friday the 22nd here at KTOO and at 360 Space downstairs.
That's correct, yes.
So what have you pre-selected for readings? Which of the canon of the Bard have you chosen for sharing initially?
Well, we will have another element, a cold reading kind of mini competition. So people who are feeling so inclined who maybe didn't prepare something but want to read something, we'll have some cold reading selections, and they'll pick an envelope, and they won't be able to see what's in it. And it'll be a monologue or a sonnet, and they'll get up and cold read it, and then we'll have separate winners from those, from the cold readings. But other than that, people can choose whatever they want. The theme this year is love, but people can choose whatever monologue or scene or sonnet that they want to read.
So what script in yon manila envelope lurketh, sort of?
Well, there's many sonnets to choose from.
There was no iambic pentameter in what I just said.
There's a lot of sonnets to choose from, so we will probably pick and choose from those. And then some of the I don't necessarily think we're going to do too many of the monologues. We'll probably stick to the sonnets just because of the fact that a lot of people will probably prepare monologues, but we might throw a couple of them in there. There's some really good ones, so I want to make sure some of them get read.
And it begins at 6 o'clock this Friday evening. How long will the event run?
We are probably estimating about 2 hours. We're opening with a song from the Five Lesbians, from Five Lesbians Eating a Quiche. The cast from that is coming back together. We put on that show back in April, and they're coming back together, and they're singing the Sisterhood song to kick off the event. And, after that, there's going to be some, the mini cold read competition. People are going to get up, and we'll try to move it along pretty quickly. So probably an hour and a half to 2 hours.
All right, so that's not too daunting for some people. Think, oh my goodness, it's a five act production of Henry V, and it's not. Okay.
It is not. And you definitely certainly don't have to stay the whole time if you want to come and show your support, and then maybe hit dinner or a movie. That's perfectly acceptable.
Well, before we talk a little bit about JDLT and a more general context, were you able to find an organization in Orlando? I don't know if someone at Pulse Nightclub is dealing with this, or if they have a Pride Society there. But how hard was that to find someone on the other side of the continent to know that you'd be sending these proceeds to once you were able to raise them?
There's a GoFundMe account open to the entire nation, anyone who wants to give to that. And that's what we're planning to donate to. That way we know that it's going to be given and we're not dealing with anything that it might be only for this group of people or for just, this group of people. It's going to hopefully get dispersed to everyone who was affected.
Because they've already set that infrastructure up, and it's online, so that makes it really easy for you to do.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And it's been verified that I forget now if it was from the nightclub that set it up or if it was one of the societies. I probably should have looked that up before I came on.
Well,
I
guess one of the two. But if people are interested, I'm sure they could probably go and look up Pulse Shooting and find pretty quickly online that on their own. So if someone's not going to be here this weekend and they wanted to make a donation, that's the end result.
We also, if you are not here, if you're not physically in town or not able to go to the event, we are planning on live streaming the event. Via Facebook, and I believe we're actually live streaming this interview via Facebook at the moment. And we're going to live stream the event. You can go to our webpage or to the Facebook event, and we'll have a link there that you can donate, and you can still make your donations count towards your favorite performer. So if you're planning on coming and reading a monologue, you can tell your mom that lives in Spokane to go online and watch, and you'll click on the link and donate directly to us and, put the name of the performer in, and you can have your money go towards your favorite performer or just towards the donation amount.
So kind of like Hoosier Diva, just shameless nepotism at work.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. As long as it's transparent, then we can allow for that, I suppose. So what is Juno Douglas Little Theater's website?
jdlittletheater.org, and that's theater with an R-E.
Okay, jdlittletheater.org. And Heather, you mentioned one of the productions done earlier this year. What else does JDLT have going on these days?
Well, we typically lay pretty low in the summertime, so we're going to be coming back more so in the fall. We always do the 24-hour miracle. We're aiming to do that in October this year. And that has been going on for years, but it's a whole day dedicated to putting on original work, and we're going to be doing that. I'm looking to direct another show in the fall, hopefully, and we've been talking about a lot of things coming up, so just like us on Facebook, and then you can see the auditions and things along those lines.
Juno Douglas Little Theater, when I first came back, when I lived here in the 90s as a legislative aide, it was very productive and did a lot of shows in the old big city book space, the Palace Theater space.
Yeah.
And then when I moved back after law school in 2001, it was kind of not too active, but it had some fits and spurts. They did a production of Sylvia. But then about 2005, 2006, it really went into a dormant phase. So it's just been the last couple of years Juno Douglas Little Theater has reemerged.
Mm-hmm. We've been coming back with the 24-hour miracles, but we did Five Lesbians Eating a Quiche back in April, and that was our first full-length production for over a decade.
Yeah, for a long, long time.
Yeah, and it was we have a board of directors right now. We're trying really hard to make sure that we're all doing the work that we want to do. But one of our biggest struggles is the fact that we don't have a theater to go to. We have to find space in Juno, and it's expensive, and we don't have a lot of money, obviously. But this money's going to the fundraiser. We try to find space. We were in the Hangar Ballroom for Five Lesbians. So, I mean, it's a small space, but it worked for that.
They were really great to us.
Wonderful, yeah. And that's the biggest struggle that we face is just finding a place to do what we want to do.
Right. Well, I know that this isn't the topic of our conversation right now, but I know next week that there is going to be another community meeting for the Willoughby Arts Complex project out at the Valley Library on Tuesday of next week. And the information on that's at the JAHC website. And I believe Juno Douglas Little Theater When I was on the Performing Arts Center Commission 12 years ago, that was one of the constituent groups that expressed interest in using a new performing arts space downtown if and when it could be built.
We are definitely watching that closely.
And I think it's a when, not an if, but that when may be a few years off given the straitened circumstances mm-hmm. the state of Alaska is facing right now. Well, that's very exciting. So Juno Douglas Little Theater is it's not just rebounding, but really kind of doing some innovative, beneficial consciousness, awareness, raising, fundraising for a really worthy cause. But that also kind of gets you out there and gets some cohesion behind the group that'll let you do more full-on theatrical productions, which is the mission of the organization.
Exactly. Building on our mission, our mission is to try and get people who maybe don't have another opportunity to do theater. There's a professional theater in Down Perseverance does professional grade shows multiple times a year, and those are wonderful, but it can be intimidating for someone who's never been on stage to go audition or to get through the audition process onto stage. And so we're here, we're trying to be a lot more relaxed. We're not a professional theater. We're more of the community theater vibe. We're trying to get those people who don't have the other opportunities to get on stage and try it out and see if they like it, maybe build their acting experience to where they're more comfortable trying to audition for a professional show.
And so this weekend, on Friday night, if you want to come and support the victims of the tragedy in Orlando, you'll also have a chance to talk to Stacy and Heather and Frank about GDLT one-on-one. You can learn a little bit more about some of the shows they're thinking of doing. And if you have a show you think they should do and you think you'd be perfect for, you can talk their ear off once the event wraps up.
Please do.
Yes, please. We love when people come forward because we can't do it all ourselves. If you want to do a show, we would love to help you do that show.
Mm-hmm. We love producing local work, so if you have a play that you've written, we would love to be involved with that. If you want to direct something, if you want to stage manage something, we really want to support people in all aspects of theater.
And, of course, Perseverance, as a professional theater company, can't do what it does without people getting involved at other levels, you know, whether it's at the grammar school or the junior high schools or the high schools, and then this is kind of the university, but this is kind of that next step in that continuum from being in The Grinch That Stole Christmas in kindergarten to going to Broadway.
That's our goal.
Excellent. Well, anything else you would like to share with our listeners on a Juno afternoon about Juno Douglas Little Theater generally or about the fundraiser this coming Friday night specifically?
Well, I would like to take a second to thank the sponsors.
We've had
an overwhelming response from local businesses in trying to put on this specific fundraiser. K2O has been a wonderful sponsor. We also have through ways of donating money or items for prizes and silent auction. We have a list of people, if I can read those off.
Please do.
We have Hearthside Books. We have the State Museum, Douglas Cafe, Crepe Escape, AK Robotics, Alaska Dames and Gents, Balloons by Night Moods, Perseverance Theater, Busting Out Boutique, Heritage Coffee, Juno Trading Post, Kindred Post, Alaska Brewing Company, COPA, Aurora Project. This list goes on. Like I said, it's been overwhelming. The Art Department, Northern Tea House, Reuben Willis State Farm, the Law Office of Kevin Higgins, Edward Jones, Southeast Radiation, Theater in the Rough, and Rockwell are our confirmed sponsors so far.
Excellent. Well, if you didn't just hear your name on that list of sponsors and you want to provide some sponsorship, reach out to Juno Douglas Little Theater, and I'm sure they would be happy to take whatever it is you could donate to help make the event all that much more of a success.
Definitely.
All right. Well, Frank, Heather, Stacy, thanks so much for coming on a Juno afternoon. And I now strongly encourage you to go outside and enjoy a little bit of those fleeting bits of sun before a raindrop falls, okay?
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Again.
Thanks.
This is Bird Note. I'm Dominic Black. Talking to Rose Renfrew's fun. She's a conservation biologist at the Vermont Center for Eco Studies. She's passionate about a whole range of conservation issues, and she loves, wait for it, grasslands, like the Konza Prairie.
It's just this beautiful, vast, rolling prairie by the Flint Hills of Kansas.
It's this rich, vivid biological realm that has Rose Renfrew entranced, and in particular, the birds that depend on it.
We had to learn how to catch this bird for a study called the upland sandpiper. And this is like your ordinary sandpiper. You might see at a beach or at a wetland, except they only live in grasslands and they live in uplands. They aren't associated with water. And they have kind of this long neck, long legs, and kind of a small head for their body. And they have this long wolf whistle that they give when they fly and land. So I've been watching them for years and years, and I finally got to hold one in my hand, and it was just beautiful, the patterns in their feathers and their wings, to see one up close like that.
Rose Renfrew is a conservation biologist at the Vermont Center for Eco Studies. For BirdNote, I'm Dominic Black.
This station receives support from Canyon Hydro with custom hydro system designs, complete water-to-wire packages, and repair and replacement services for public and private hydro systems, serving small communities since 1976. More information is available at canyonhydro.com.
Do you or someone you care for live with chronic pain or a chronic disease like high blood pressure, diabetes, or heart disease? You can learn to manage the symptoms, understand the disease, and communicate more easily with providers. Find a list of Living Well classes offered around the state at livingwell.alaska.gov. This message, sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services and the American Diabetes Association, aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
Take two, one, two, three.
You see my car keys on the table, my traveling boots out on the floor. That's you peeking around the corner, looking at my bag back by the door. And while I have to say goodbye, when I come home and you're surprised, yeah, you're gonna drive your mother crazy. Yeah, now the grass will grow and the wheels make change direction, but child, I need you to know that the love I have is always set in stone. Set in stone. And when I'm gone, if you hear mama cry and you hear angry shouting on the phone, just remember, child, we'll try to keep our house a happy home. And though we may fuss and fight, Mom and I are gonna be alright. Yeah, we'll be making up till Sunday morning. Yeah, now the storms will blow and the clouds make way for sunshine. Child, we need you to know that this love we share is always set in stone. Set in stone. Even if I'm miles and miles away, past Pluto and the Milky Way, never be alone now. My love is set in stone. Now as the highway rolls, your love gives me sense of direction. Child, I need you to know, when I'm far away from home, you never really be alone. Cause the love we have is set in stone.
It's about 52 minutes after the hour, and this is the Juno Afternoon. That was Martin Sexton, Set in Stone, from his album A Mixtape of the Open Road. Martin Sexton will be playing at this year's Southeast Alaska State Fair in Haines. And before his number, we heard another artist who'll be playing at the Southeast State Fair, Christy Lene, her album Chasing Infinity, and the track was Ivory Coast.
After joining the military, up to 40% of service members start smoking. That's more than double the rate of all adults in the United States. The Coast Guard discourages tobacco use, which compromises physical fitness, costs millions in lives and healthcare dollars, and exposes non-smokers to secondhand smoke. Please support tobacco-free policies and our service members and veterans. To achieve freedom from tobacco addiction, call Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW. This message is brought to you by the Partnership for Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
And it's 53 minutes, almost 54 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. This is Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, the 19th of July. The weather forecast from our friends at the National Weather Service is for isolated showers this afternoon, mostly cloudy conditions, with a high near 69. Although I have to tell you, it felt warmer than that when I was outside a moment ago. West wind around 10 miles per hour and a 20% chance of precipitation. This evening, scattered showers, mostly cloudy, with a low around 56 degrees. West wind from 5 to 15 miles per hour, becoming southeast in the evening, and the chance of precipitation increasing to 40%. That will persist tomorrow, about a 40% chance of rain, cloudy with a high near 59, a little cooler, and again southeast winds. The rest of the week, we're looking at 40 or 50% chances of rain or showers, cloudy conditions. Nothing record-breakingly lovely like it was yesterday, but, you know, we would all be sunburned if it was like it was yesterday all the time, and a lot more people would live here than live here. The hike, the Juneau Parks and Recreation Community Hike for tomorrow, the 20th of July, is Granite Creek Basin. The rendezvous point is at the end of Basin Road at 9:30 a.m. Granite Creek Trailhead is, of course, off the Perseverance Trail about 2 miles up. It's a moderate hike, about 7 miles round trip. Please dress appropriately for the weather. Bring food and something to drink and a camera, but no dogs or firearms, and have a great hike. Tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon, Christy Linné, who the guitarist, we're going to hear another one of her tracks in a moment here, will be here. Amy Skilbred from the Juneau Community Foundation will be here, along with Marianne Mills from Southeast Senior Services, to talk about funding services for seniors. There'll be a preview of an upcoming gospel choir performance. And the guests we weren't able to have on today, M.K. McNaughton, Mark Graham, and Megan Garrison, I am told, will be here to talk about their tote bag. Thanks so much for listening to A Juneau Afternoon, and we'll go out with some more music by Christy Linné from her album Chasing Infinity.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AF.